You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin
on KVON Napa, 1440 AM at KVON.com.
And we are ready to kick off something new on the Wine Country Live Morning Show. First of what's a series to come, Dr. Simon Says, and the Dr. Simon we're talking about is Dr. Dave Simon, who's joining us now here in studio. Good morning.
Good morning.
Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
So, first kind of question, what kind of a doctor are you?
So, I'm an eye surgeon. I've practiced ophthalmology for 20-plus years. Specializing in cataract and refractive surgery, which refractive surgery is LASIK and PRK, that sort of surgery. I do comprehensive ophthalmology as well, which includes, you know, taking care of all kinds of eye problems, including just routine eye exams.
Mm-hmm. What's most common surgery? Is it cataracts these days?
For sure. Hands down, cataract surgery is really the most common surgery done in the country, from all surgeries, but for eye surgeons in particular, it's our most common surgery, followed by LASIK, and it really depends on what your specialty is. So many of the LASIK surgeons just do LASIK, and many cataract surgeons just do cataracts, and so I do a mix of both.
Can I ask a dumb question?
Sure.
What is a cataract?
So a cataract is basically something that everyone is going to get. You just have to live long enough to see your cataracts, not
okay.
to use a pun. It's your natural lens inside your eye that changes color, if you will, over time.
Oh.
And we're all exposed to different things in the environment just from being on this planet for a number of years, UV rays, pollutants, tobacco smoke maybe, and over time, depending on what you're exposed to, you're going to get your cataracts at typically somewhere between, on average, late 50s to early 70s. The average cataract surgery is probably somewhere between 65 and 70 years of age.
All right. I've always heard it, but I never knew exactly what it was.
Yeah.
You know, when you look at old dogs, you can almost always see.
Oh, they're cloudy.
Right? Is that evidence of the cataract, that milky, cloudy look?
Well, it depends. Dogs are known, and I'm not a veterinary ophthalmologist, although I have done some conferences with the UC Davis Veterinary Ophthalmology Group. But dogs are known to get glaucoma. Which can actually also cause a cloudy cornea. So the cornea is like the windshield of the eye. That's the front of the eye that everyone sees before you get to see your iris or where your pupil is. Behind the pupil is where your cataract lives.
Wow.
So that's where your natural lens is. And again, over time, that's the part that gets yellowish and gets hard to see through. But again, if your cornea, which is again the windshield, if that's cloudy, that's going to make for difficult vision as well.
But a different problem.
Different problem. Yeah. But yes, you will see the dogs. Oftentimes, you'll notice the cataracts as well, and they get surgery by the veterinary ophthalmologist.
I just got creeped out thinking about eyeballs again. I don't know why eyeballs creep me out. They're like jelly-like and doing surgery on... Oh, you have to have steady hands, man.
Oh yeah. I'm completely comfortable with eyeballs. Feet, different story. I don't want to see any foot surgeries.
Yeah.
Everybody's got their thing, right?
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But, all right.
I used to have this just crossed my mind. Bear with me. Back when I was outdoors a lot, in the sun a lot, I got a thing that was, you could see it in my eye between the corner and the pupil, like a little angry looking spot.
Sure.
Right? What's that called? I forgot what that's called.
I think you're describing a pterygium.
Pterygium?
Yes. Did you have surgery for it?
No, it went away when I got out of that environment.
Okay, so there's this thing that starts off called a pinguecula.
That's actually the term I'm
referring
to.
Pinguecula, which is it's a change that occurs on the surface of your eye from the UV rays. And so people that grew up closer to the equator are more likely to have them. But that pinguecula, when it crosses onto the clear part of your eye, then it gets a name change to pterygium. And typically people do surgeries for pterygia. Those, you know, they can obstruct the vision. They can be right in the middle of your vision. So that, you know, typically does require surgery if they get far enough across your eye. But the pinguecula again, typically they go away with eye drops and just getting you out of that environment.
I think that's what I diagnosed myself as having. The first, the ping, say it again for me.
The pinguecula.
Pinguecula.
So kind pinguecula. Of, yeah, kind
did
of like.
Did you like WebMD it? And
yeah, like, probably. You know, it was when I was out in the sun without sunglasses when I was coaching soccer all the time. And and you wouldn't, it didn't affect my vision.
Right.
But when I would look in the mirror, you could see like, ooh, that looks bad. And it led me to wonder, you know, is there such a thing as having sensitive eyes, more sensitive to that kind of thing from UV? Do some people have more like redness and tiredness? Is that a genetic thing or just a purely exposure?
I think it's purely exposure. Yeah.
Okay. So, LASIK.
Now that we have Barry's eye issues under control.
You're kind of creepy things with eyes. I think that's what led me to it. Because looking in the mirror, it was very weird looking. It was like, that's not right.
And by the way, while we're on that, with pinguiculitis, which is what you're... Pinguiculitis, which is inflammation of that pinguecula. It's one of the only times I recommend Visine. So one thing that's kind of important for people to know, Visine, nothing against the brand, but those eye drops that clear up redness, gets the red out type drops. There's about, you know, at least five different brands out there. They're not good for daily use.
Why is that?
They vasoconstrict and they actually decrease blood flow. And and what happens is you build a tolerance to that eye drop, and then you're as a response to that, your blood vessels actually get dilated more.
Wow.
So it's your eyes are kind of waiting for that drop every day. It's better, much better to use artificial tears. The only good thing that in my opinion, those vasoconstrictors, other than pinguiculitis, I recommend it really just for like weddings and important events. You know, if you're, if you wake up and now you got the red or a job interview, got those red eyes and you just want to take care of it. Maybe, maybe once in a while, three times a week at the most, but not, not an everyday thing.
Okay.
So artificial
tears
are,
I don't
better,
even think I own any artificial tears anymore or those drops anymore.
Yeah.
Do they sell those in the same places?
They're all over the counter.
Okay.
Yeah.
I've never even thought about that. I been a Visine user.
But Visine, I mean, everybody jumps to that brand. It's great brand recognition. And Visine actually has the artificial tears that are not, gets the red out type as well.
Gotcha. So, this is the kind of consumer information that this show is all about.
Seriously.
Right here? Yeah. Good quality. So let's talk about LASIK. Now, this has been around 15, 20 years in a mainstream form. Is that true?
That's true.
Yeah.
Around 1995, a gentleman down in Bogota, Colombia, actually invented the idea of laser-assisted in situ keratomelusis, which is what LASIK stands for. And it just means that we're with LASIK, we're using a laser to remove some tissue. But before we get to that area where the tissue is removed, we're actually creating a little flap of your own tissue and pulling the flap back, reshaping the cornea with a laser, and then putting that flap back. Two different surgeries that most of us refractive surgeons do. LASIK, which is what I just described, and also something called PRK, which is photorefractive keratectomy, which was actually invented before LASIK using the same exact laser, but the laser pattern is used at the surface of the cornea. So we just brush off the outer cells that grow back every day, reshape the cornea, and let those cells grow back. But LASIK and PRK are very, very similar. Different safety profiles for different patients. LASIK, you get that wow factor. Your vision's, you know, most of the time, 99 plus percent of the time, really good the next day. Mm. PRK just takes a few days to get there, a few weeks really to get to that end result. But but they tend to have the same exact result. But LASIK gets you there quickly.
And that next day when you're at home after you've had the LASIK and you look around and say, oh my God, my house is filthy.
This is a true story, I'll tell you. I was a bachelor doing my residency training in Washington, D.C. at Walter Reed Hospital. And I had my LASIK done. And I, the next morning, you know, I looked in the shower and it was just filthy. You know, who goes, you know, nobody goes in their shower with their glasses or their contacts on typically. Yeah. And so I was just, I was amazed. I was like, oh my gosh, okay, I got to get my cleaning. I got to go buy some cleaning stuff now.
That's awesome.
I vividly remember when LASIK became a thing, or laser eye surgery in general, because I was on the radio at the time, and it was the promotional activity and the advertising for it was immense because, you know, obviously there was a lot of demand and need, and if this really worked, a lot of people would want to do it.
Sure.
But there was great suspicion and doubt, like there is about the vaccine now, or was at least, right? People say, oh, I wouldn't let somebody get near my eyes with a laser beam. That's not a good idea. There's no long-term analysis or study, people said, but I don't know if that was true. So what do we know now, all these years later, risk level and effectiveness level?
Yes, and I mean, risk is a really important question there, and we look very carefully at risk stratification for each patient when they come in. And I can tell you, you know, 20 plus years ago when I started doing LASIK, it was a different set of studies that we did on patients compared to what we do today. So we're able to really look at many more dimensions of the eye, of the cornea, and specifically because that's the part of the eye that we're affecting. Again, that windshield of the eye I was talking about. We're reshaping that cornea. So we are actually removing tissue and potentially thinning out the cornea. The cornea has some structural integrity like a bridge. And so if you thin it out too much, it might stretch. And so that's what we worry about. And so we're very careful about choosing the right patients. And there's many patients that come in for a number of reasons, and they're not candidates, and we have to turn them away. Could be because they have cataracts, and then it's a different surgery that's right for them instead of LASIK in order to get rid of the glasses. It could be your corneas are too thin. Could be your corneas have the wrong shape. But we know a lot more now than we did back in the old days, you know, 10, 20 years ago, if you will. So that's made a huge difference.
Is LASIK are these surgeries covered by insurance, or are they considered cosmetic?
Yeah, they're typically not covered by insurance. They are considered cosmetic in a sense that you could achieve good vision with glasses or contacts. So the insurance companies, they don't typically cover the procedure. I think of myopia or nearsightedness as a true disability in a way. If I broke my glasses and there's an earthquake and I had to run out and do something, for the sake of my family.
Read the instructions on how to turn off the gas.
It would be very difficult if I couldn't see well. So, you know, I had LASIK done years ago, and I don't think about that kind of thing anymore. But many people, that's a big amount of stress. You know, I have this event that just occurred, and I need to find my contact lenses, and hopefully my hands are clean, and, you know, or my glasses aren't broken, you know.
Man, I put on contacts for a few shows that we've done when I wanted to, you know, change my eye color. When I was playing Rosemary Clooney, I wanted the blue eyes, and it was like a struggle.
Yeah.
I am not, I couldn't imagine wearing contacts every day.
You have to get used to it. And on the other hand, there's many people that do really well with contacts as well. And I still tell people, look, if you're really happy with those contact lenses and they're working for you, you have good vision, and you're taking them out at night, you're cleaning them, or if they're daily disposables, you're throwing them away and getting fresh ones every day. It's pretty safe. And again, if you're happy with that, no reason to move to a surgery where you are going to put yourself at a little bit of risk.
Yeah.
So I've been wearing glasses since I was about 13, and I have astigmatism. Mm-hmm. So back in the days, early laser surgery days, they didn't have procedure for astigmatism, but I think they do now.
Yeah. Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Tell us about that. What conditions are suitable for LASIK?
Well, the laser, the generations of lasers have lasers have definitely improved over the years. We're on, like I say, the fourth or fifth generation laser compared to the one that I had, 20 years ago. And, my vision is still 20/20 with the old laser. Now we're able to actually put a pattern, use a laser pattern that corrects your vision as unique as a fingerprint is for you. I mean, normally glasses and contacts and the old laser patterns, there's probably hundreds of thousands of people that have prescriptions just like you. But now we're able to really correct for a unique prescription for you, what we call wavefront technology or custom cornea, and astigmatism included. There are high levels of astigmatism that the laser cannot treat. So there's, you know, just like anything, there's a certain limit. But by and large, most astigmatism, most nearsightedness, many of the farsighted people we can actually treat as well. Yeah.
Good to know. We're talking with Dr. Dave Simon in our new Dr. Simon Says segment.
Oh, I have a question.
Sure.
Okay, my mom always told me if I read in the dark, I would lose my eyesight. Is that true?
I would say no.
Sweet! I can keep doing it.
I would say no. It's really funny. As we get older, we do notice. When I passed my mid 40s, I noticed that reading in the dark became much more difficult. Mm-hmm. So I think that's part of what happens when an adult sees a kid reading in the dark. They say, "Well, that's really can't be good for your eyes." And mm-hmm. It's better to have good lighting when you're reading, of course. But I don't think you're going to go blind by reading in the dark.
I'm getting up there. It's getting harder to read in the dark, but I can still do it.
great. Good news. You mentioned Walter Reed, did some training Walter Reed. Right. Tell us more about where'd you come from? How did you get interested in pursuing this career?
Well, you know, it was really my grandmother and my father's ophthalmologist in the west coast of Florida, where I grew up, who, believe it or not, trained at Walter Reed as well, about 20 years before me. And really got me interested in the idea of eye surgery in general. I was at the end of high school or early in college, and I actually got to sit in on some cataract surgeries, and it was the coolest thing I'd ever seen. You know, I think as a kid, of course, we're all playing video games, and this actually is in a way is similar, using your hand and hand-eye coordination to make people see better. And I kind of took to it pretty quickly, and it always became a goal of mine. So when I went through medical school at the University of Miami, I always aspired to go into ophthalmology, and I was lucky enough to get accepted into a program at Walter Reed and kind of follow in that my mentor's footsteps, which is pretty cool. Mm-hmm.
And how'd you end up in California?
So when we were in the Air Force, I did 22 years in the Air Force. So when I was at year, I guess, 16 in the military, the opportunity came up to work at Travis Air Force Base, and so, you know, my wife and I looked at a map. Well, there were two choices. One was Anchorage, Alaska, and one was Northern California.
Tough choice.
Yep. And so, you know, of course, my wife Leah said, "No, I don't really want to go to Anchorage. I'd rather go to Northern California." And we'd been to Napa before, and I said, "Well, let's look at the map, figure out where we want to live." And Napa seemed like the clear choice. So a little bit of a commute going to Travis for a few years, but we've lived here for, I guess, about 9 years now. No, it was, we came out in 2012. That's about right. Yeah.
Very good.
So, about 9 years we've been living in Napa, and, for many of those years I commuted to Fairfield every day, loved my job with the Air Force, but I knew it was time to retire and get out. And, opportunity to open a practice here, was there for me, and it's been a wonderful decision.
Mm-hmm. And if somebody were to Google for your practice, what should they be searching for? What's the name of it?
So it's Simon Eyes is the name of the practice, and the website is simoneyesmd.com.
Very good. And Dr. Dave Simon, our guest for the Dr. Simon Says radio segment on Wine Country Live, our first session. It was fun. Good to get to know you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
I feel like I learned so much.
We did. And the word of the day now is penguecula.
That's right.
I just think of a penguin.
That's okay. That'll help you remember it. Okay. All right. Thanks, doctor.
Yeah, thank you.
You're listening to the Wine Country Live Morning Show with Barry Martin.
On KVON Napa, 1440 AM and KVON.com.